Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. I'm Ryan Dobson, along with our host, psychologist and best-selling author, Dr. James Dobson. And today we're going to enjoy a classic program featuring my dad and two excellent guests, Mrs. Pat Holt and Dr. Grace Ketterman, on the dangers of screaming at our children. I think maybe all of us are guilty of this at some point in our lives. You know, sometimes our kids, these dear, precious children with cute smiles, can drive us crazy. And unfortunately for many of us, we lose our tempers and lash out at them with raised voices. If you're like me, you probably feel like a terrible parent when this happens, and that's why we're going to talk about this. There is hope, and there is a better way, and we're going to talk about that on today's broadcast. On our program today, Pat Holt and Dr. Ketterman will not only talk about the dangers of yelling at children, but will also offer some practical advice and help for parents who struggle with this. I want to give as much time to the program as possible, so here now is Dr. James Dobson on this classic edition of Family Talk.
We're going to talk today about one of the most common errors in parenting, one that I think virtually every mother or father, a trap, really, that they fall into at one time or another. But for some, it's an everyday occurrence, and I mean a big-time problem. And I'm referring to the habit of screaming at our children when they either frustrate us or annoy us, or even if they don't do anything. Where just your own irritations and frustrations can lead you to raise your voice and scream at your children. Both mothers and fathers can be screamers and yellers, and it can have serious implications, not only for the children, but for the entire family. It sets a tone in the family, and where you have mothers and fathers who have this problem, the intensity level of the home can really become a serious problem. So here to help us deal with this topic that I feel is extremely important, I want to give it the greatest emphasis, Pat Holt and Dr. Grace Ketterman. Pat is a teacher, or was for several years, at the elementary school level. Dr. Ketterman is a psychiatrist and a pediatrician. She has written or co-authored 11 books. You all have written a book that I think is worthy of the greatest significance here. The title of it is When You Feel Like Screaming, Help for Frustrated Mothers. Pat, you co-authored this book with Dr. Ketterman. It was sort of your idea. You began doing some research. Why don't you give us a little bit of background on that?
Yes, I did. I had no intention of writing a book, certainly on this subject. But in preparation for a seminar for women, I went into our 4th, 5th, and 6th grade classrooms, thought I'd ask the children to just anonymously write, "What do you like best about your mother?" Then as an afterthought, I asked them to, "Oh, while you're doing that, why don't you just also tell us what you dislike most about your mother?"
And you asked them not to put the names on the paper.
No names, please. What amazed me was that although the different things that they liked about their mother best varied, what they disliked about their mother did not vary. Over and over again, the children said the same thing. Her screaming, her yelling, "I can't stand it when she screams." And just the passion in their statements then made me go back into the classrooms and again ask something anonymously. I wrote on the board, "Mommy, stop screaming." And in each of these 4th, 5th, and 6th grade classrooms, there were some snickers and some knowing sighs when they saw that on the board.
They obviously recognized the
significance
of it.
They related, and it almost broke my heart to read what these children had written anonymously. They either wrote about something they had experienced or something they had witnessed, or just something from their imagination. But the stories were very, very touching. 150 stories from 3rd, 4th, and 5th, and 6th grade children. Well, with that information, I thought, this is not fair. We only have one side of the story. What's going on with the mothers? We have our side, too. Why do we scream? Well, we did a questionnaire and received a lot of information, which is included in the book.
And you sent it to 200 women, I believe.
Across the United States. Some were Christians and some were non-Christians, but the results were the same. Women scream. 94% of the women across the nation admitted to screaming.
Ah, why did they tell you that they scream?
There were three primary reasons. Number one, stress.
For reasons other than the child.
Yes, any kind of stress. When you've just had it up to here with whatever it is, then you will scream. And tied right along with that is that there is too much happening at once. You know the old thing that the doorbell's ringing, there's something wrong with the dishwasher, the phone is ringing, the baby's crying, your teenager is wanting to know why he can't go here or there. You've just had it, and you scream. And right along with that, the third big reason is they just don't feel well.
And I would add some other reasons that maybe mothers don't think about on the surface, and that is that they are afraid they can't manage this big job of being a mother. And so when they're feeling pretty insecure and frightened about their own capabilities, by getting more intense and raising their voices and speaking more loudly, I think they feel more powerful. And they believe then they have the strength to handle the situation.
Have you in your private practice had women come to you with this problem and say, I can't help it. I know I'm doing damage to my children. I explode when I don't mean to, and I feel guilty afterwards. Have you heard that scenario?
Oh, absolutely. Though, again, it often comes from other people more than it does from the mother. The children complain of it. One little boy said, Mother, you get so angry. And she said, well, I don't get angry. And he said, oh, but you do. And she said, no, I don't. And she was obviously doing it right in front of us. And he said, well, then why does your face get so red? And why do you yell? And, of course, that's exactly what happens. Mothers don't intend to yell. They don't want to lose control. But in their earnestness to get something done, they do yell.
What do you think, Grace, as a psychiatrist, what do you think the long-term effect of that is?
Well, I believe that it does one of two or three things. I believe it either causes withdrawal and intimidation in the child, and it did that to me. My mother, frankly, was a very loud mother, and I recall almost every time we would end up with a long, loud lecture, I would go to my room and feel just devastated.
Did you scream back at her?
No, I would not have been allowed to do that. But I vowed I would never scream at my children. And interestingly enough, I didn't. The other extreme of that is that children do yell back at their mothers, and then they end up growing up to become screaming parents themselves. Somewhere in between are the children who manage to understand, to evade, to escape that yelling anger.
Pat, did you find a lot of guilt in the letters that came from these parents?
Oh, yes. And almost a sense of relief. We're all anxious to be salt and light in the world. And we know we're here to win the world for Jesus Christ. And so there is a double heaping of guilt than when we succumb to being like all the other mothers who scream. The mothers told us that just being aware of their screaming was the first step in helping them to control themselves.
So just a book of this nature saying, be careful, this is a problem, and here's what precipitates it, and here are the consequences of it. That in itself is helpful.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I had an experience of screaming at my son one time. While I just have said that I rarely screamed at my children, there were a few times, obviously, when I did. And I recall feeling, after I had yelled at him over something and sent him off to his room, so devastated. I thought, oh, I have done this terrible thing that my mother used to do, and I vowed I would never do it. And so I couldn't bear it. And I fixed a big piece of chocolate cake and a glass of milk and took it up to him where he was rather pensively sitting and thinking in his room. And he looked at me in astonishment, said, Mother, you've just spoiled the whole thing. He was so right, because I had laid on him my own feelings as a child. But in his case, it was a well-deserved lecture, and it had a purpose for him. So that guilt is a really important issue.
You mentioned in the book that you thought fatigue was a key factor. I think you ought to elaborate on that, because women are in a different situation than they were 10 years ago. for the most part. Explain the linkage there.
We're trying to be Wonder Women. We've been told that we can do it all. And it's just now being proven that we cannot do it all. But somebody sold us a bill of goods that we can do everything and that we can do it well. And so we strive to do the best. We want to be the best when we're at work. We want to be the best when we're at home. And certainly as a mother, each of us grew up wanting to do what? To be married to the right man and be a mommy. And then when we find ourselves screaming at these children out of weariness, it's very traumatic to us.
That infamous quote by Vince Lombardi keeps coming up here, but he said, "Fatigue makes cowards of us all." And it's really true. When you get worn out, the routine things that you could have coped with very well when you were rested become overwhelming. And this rapid pace, this life in the fast lane, this situation where mothers and fathers are working and moonlighting and exhausting themselves outside the home sets us up for this kind of frustration over minor little things that children do, spilling the milk or just failing to get the homework done, things that are inevitable in childhood. And we explode. And in fact, Grace, I'm sure you agree that this is not limited just to verbal abuse, that it can lead very easily to emotional abuse and even physical molestation.
Yes. And very commonly that goes on from verbal abuse to either neglect by parents who are afraid that they might hurt the child or they're so angry they can't say another word, which I think is almost worse than abuse or the actual physical abuse. If there is one thing I wish every parent could understand, it is this concept of not having infinite supplies of energy. We do, as Pat said, we do tend to expect that of ourselves, and it is limited. It's one of the things I learned early on in my psychiatric training, and it is just as true now as it was then.
When I was a mother of two young children, I attended a seminar, and a mother of eight was speaking to us, and she said to us, I shall never forget it, she said, "Girls, you can simplify your lives. Yes, you really can." And I thought, no, I can't. But I've thought about that through the years, and many times I've realized that I was overbooked, trying to do too much and trying to do it all well, and having to admit, oh, the pride, the blow to the pride in having to admit, I can't do it all, and I can't do it all perfectly. So we'll eliminate what's the most important, the children.
You were a full-time teacher, and in fact, you taught the emotionally and mentally handicapped, didn't you?
That's right. I did that before I had my own children.
You have not taught since you had children, is that right?
Since I've had children, I have been the director of a preschool. I started the preschool for my own children, but I was working part-time, 3 days a week, and that was plenty.
Did you, even with that schedule, sense some of the fatigue that we were talking about?
Oh, yes, absolutely. And I began to wonder how these moms do the superhuman jobs that they do who have to work full-time. And then you add to that the people who are single parents. And I'm in awe of what they can do, but I think they're too hard on themselves.
I think so, too. And I really worry about the many children whose mothers are in full-time work and doing so many extra things. The children are left long hours for extended periods of time in daycare away from their mothers and fathers. And I think studies are indicating that is really hurting children. And we have to be careful in even saying that because many mothers truly have to work. They can't help those long hours, but finding other ways then to simplify life and to keep it possible to spend the amount of time needed without being frustrated to the point of yelling is the challenge we're talking about.
I can't help but think of those mothers in a moment like this because I know what they're thinking. They're saying, now, come on, you're not going to make me feel even worse and more guilty about a circumstance I can't change.
Right.
I'm a single mother. I have to work. I do come home tired. I do get irritated and frustrated at my kids, and I do yell at them. What answer, what hope do you have for them? because my heart goes out to them. They got a tough job.
Mine too, because Dr. Dobson, I was working as a pediatrician when my children were small in the days when you had to make night calls, and I know what it was to be exhausted and to have those needs and the desire to be a good mother still there. So I have great empathy for them. And I have some wonderful words of advice. Being a grandmother now, I'm very full of advice. But I suggest that every working mother takes a few minutes to shift gears before picking up her children or going home to them. Just a few minutes to park the car or to walk barefoot through the grass in her own front yard or whatever she can do to give herself a little relaxation time and then to find time with the children. Then one more piece of advice that a nurse taught me, who is a single mother and has three children and all of that stress. She was very much learning how to do behavior modification with her children, and to teach them time out was her current thing. What she learned was to give herself time out. And she would go and sit in her room as long as the children sat on their chairs, thinking about what she really wanted them to do, what she wanted them to learn, and how best she could teach that. Those two pieces of advice, I think, are very helpful.
It's similar to what Jean Lush said on this program one time. I don't remember the exact context, but she was talking about the single mother kind of representing a three-legged stool, and one of the three was the rebuilding, the regenerating, the rest, the recreation, the input for the mother, and that you jerk that one out, and it'll go over because
Absolutely.
It can't balance
yes.
on the other two. You simply must find some time for yourself, and if
yes.
you don't, it's the children who are likely to suffer.
That's right. Another thing I know that happens out of the guilt we talked about a minute ago is that working mothers try so hard to be that perfect mother and to do everything for children. I really believe in teaching children to help carry responsibilities. Mm-hmm. And when I work with children and families, I make a big issue of helping children know what can you do to make this whole family function more smoothly and comfortably. How can you be a help to your mothers and fathers? And it really does. It takes a lot of the guilt off of mothers. Children feel proud of themselves. It makes the family a team instead of a director. There are times in an emergency, in a crisis, that you need to yell. You need to raise your voice, and always you need to be honest and not to play act. I am a little worried about parents becoming so controlled and so always peaceful and nice that they're not really quite honest. So every parent is irritated and frustrated, and to raise the voice is fine. It's the raising of the voice in extreme anger that is intense enough to frighten the child, to allow the child to feel that he or she is inept and unworthy and absolutely worthless, no good, no hope, sort of a response that I think
attack,
is damaging.
Isn't it?
Exactly, yeah. Yes. Attacking and labeling. Don't you agree, Pat?
Absolutely. And I like to think of habitual screaming as a cancer. And when you habitually scream, each time that you do it, you are injecting this cancer into the child. And what happens is that those very fragile cells of self-esteem are being destroyed. And when those cells are destroyed, that child can never reach their potential.
You referred to it there as habitual, and in fact you said in your book that you thought screaming was a habit. Explain that.
Yes, we think that screaming is a habit. And I believe it's just like any other habit that isn't good. We're almost surprised ourselves how easy it is to get into it. And you scream once one day, and oh my, the child listened.
And how tough it is to break it, right?
It is, yes. But that is the good news too. Because it's a habit, it can be broken. And that's what our book tries to do, is to help and encourage these moms who've been trapped into the habit.
Children become accustomed to the numbers of decibels that their parents use. And so they do. They tend to tune us out. And then we raise our voices because, as Pat said, it works. when you yell a little louder, then it really does catch the attention. It gets the desired result. But when you do that again and again, more and more, it's almost like an addiction. It takes more to get the same desired result.
I try to describe in my first film series that what you convey to the child through that kind of intensity is the point at which you will stop talking and begin to take mm-hmm. action. And if you typically don't take action until you have turned red in the face and used their middle name and screamed at them, it's amazing how a child reads who you are and how you typically respond, and then they know what they have to do accordingly. If I had to describe the situation that I think is most commonly to blame for a mother becoming a screamer, or father either, for that matter, it is the feeling of powerlessness in the relationship with the child.
Exactly.
You tell them to do something, and because of the self-will in the child, and we're all yes. born with this, he says by his manner, no, I won't do it. And so what do you do now? You don't want to spank a child all day long. You don't want to be beating on him or for that matter, punishing him or standing him in the corner. And so what do? Well, you say it again a little louder, and he still doesn't move, and you're more frustrated yet. And you say it again. And so what's happening is that you're being almost programmed to scream, because when you finally do turn loose and by your manner say you've had it, you've reached the end of the line, you're ready to do something about it, then he does act, and he has reinforced your screaming. You see what I mean? It's kind of hard to explain that, but it's behavior modification. Your behavior is being modified by the child, who doesn't act until you behave in that certain way. And therefore, you get to the point where you scream, because that's the only way you can get him to do what you want him to do. Well, the answer to screaming must be found in that same dimension then, finding a way to get your kids to do what you want them to do before they take you to the point of utter, complete frustration. Your subtitle says, Help for Frustrated Mothers. You have some assistance in that area?
Yes, I have some very excellent ideas. And I like especially what you said about taking action rather than to keep repeating the same words. I like what Pat wrote in the book, that you must mean what you say and say what you mean if your children are to learn obedience and to have the proper discipline and then self-control that comes out of that. So I love to help parents learn what action will work best for a given child. But to make the changes from screaming to better modes of training and discipline, I think demands, first of all, the awareness of how damaging it may be. Mm-hmm. And without wanting to help parents feel guilty, I would say to every parent who screams in this intense way that we're talking about, in that putting down of a child in the damaging way, you need to realize that that is a form of emotional abuse, and you need to feel badly enough about it that you will mm-hmm. be motivated to change.
My husband came up with three words, which I think is a goal certainly for a mom. We want to be this soft, gentle mother, and yet we want to be respected when we speak the first time. The words that he came up with were velvet over steel. Velvet is the soft, the cushion. The steel is underneath. When you speak to a child, if you say, sit down, it's soft and gentle, but there's some steel underneath it. And I think a parent needs to modify their voice.
He or she needs to know that you mean it, even though you didn't scream it. And that's the key. That's worth another program to get a little more detail about how to do that. I know there are many, many mothers listening to us right now who are saying, help me. This is my problem. I recognize it. I've known it. I haven't wanted to admit it. I'm worried about it. I feel guilty over it. Help me. Your book can help, but another conversation could also help. So let's just continue to talk about this subject next time, can we?
Surely.
I'd love to.
And as you heard my dad say at the end of the program, this is an issue that so many moms deal with, and dads, and don't be disheartened, because there is hope, and there's an opportunity to change, and we're going to talk about that next time. You've been listening to the first part of a classic program titled Screaming Mothers. I think it should be called Screaming Mothers and Fathers. Here on Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk, I'm Ryan Dobson. If you'd like more information about the Ministry of Family Talk or to pick up one of the many resources we have available on raising children, call us at 877-732-6825 or visit our website at drjamesdobson.org. And before we go, I want to take a moment to let you know about a really exciting opportunity for you to be a part of what God is doing through Family Talk. We have recently received a $400,000 matching grant that doubles every gift you give to equip and empower parents and families. Every dollar you donate this month to Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk immediately becomes $2 towards preserving and promoting the institution of the family. And it's an excellent opportunity to join us in our work. And we can't do it without the faithful support of our listeners. So if you'd like to help us reach the goal of $400,000 and maximize the potential of this grant, please call us right now at 877-732-6825. You can also donate on our website, drjamesdobson.org, on our Facebook page, or through our Family Talk smartphone app. Thanks for joining us today, and we'll see you next time for the conclusion of Screaming Mothers, right here on Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
Family Talk is not affiliated with Focus on the Family.